Cedric Muhammad.
In the Quran, it says, Allah is the friend of those who believe. He brings them out of darkness into light. So belief is compared to light. Now the word of God is light. When you believe in the word, that is light upon light. I'm going to say it again. The word is light. Faith in the word is also light. If you hear the word, you are also receiving light. But if you don't believe, then you can't open the power of the word that you're receiving. It can't benefit you because you don't believe. If you believe, then there's a tendency to carry into practice your faith.
Cedric Muhammad. Tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad.
October 14, 2009, I want to welcome you to the Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. aka the hottest show in the diaspora. I got so much to go over. And yes, that was a warning shot to all of you who have accused me of backsliding. Gospel music back in rotation. You cannot accuse me of heresy anymore. What, 2 days we are from the 14th anniversary of the Million Man March, Holy Day of Atonement? What did Jigga say? I pray for the Day of Atonement. All of you aficionados out there, Jigga said, what album was that? But Jay-Z said he prayed for the Day of Atonement. I'll pump the brakes, Jay-Z. I want you to keep getting money. Anyone watch that debacle known as the Hip Hop Honors Award? VH1 last night? That's fake applause. How could you do that to EPMD? How could you do that to Public Enemy? And how could you do that to Jigga? Ooh, disappointing. Capital D. Was Slick Rick present? Was that all about business? I'm not accusing anyone of transactions, but is this the new thing now? The Hip Hop Honors Award Show will now be up for sale. I'm pretty convinced next year it's going to be Jay-Z, the honoree. I can feel it in my bones. I have no inside information. If somebody's already blogged on that, I didn't read it. I'm like 80% sure Jay-Z will be the honoree next year. They're setting it up lovely. Listen, I want to go through the captain's blog. A lot of topics today. We're going to get real geopolitical with the business and cultural focus. Should cell phones be allowed in schools? Should cell phones be allowed in schools? This is a growing debate, not just in America, but all over the world. And we'll take a look at it from a different perspective. All you parents out there, let's give our 2 cents on this. Rush Limbaugh, some of you all... Oh, by the way, I watched Imus in the Morning, Fox Business Channel, my man Connell McShane. I told you all I wasn't impressed with the wackivism that took place in the name of Don Imus. He's richer. He's back stronger than ever. Keeping Rush Limbaugh from getting an NFL team, I don't know. Is it wackivism or black activism? Now, the crybabies on the right... What I find so humorous about the conservative free market ideologues is that somehow protesting or boycotting is not a legitimate capitalist activity. Stop crying. Mike Tyson made me cry again. Did you all see him on Oprah? Got some audio, Mike Tyson. Get the Kleenex out. We're going to chop up Michael Moore's movie, Capitalism, A Love Story. I'm going to use that as a platform to segue into a couple other discussions, if you will allow me to. Well, you know I'm going to do it anyway, but I just want to be mannerable. I want to talk about a problem in the black community that goes back maybe some 100 years. It's been a debate between intellectuals and leaders regarding notions of capitalism and socialism. I heard it when I was in school at RU in Jersey. Big debate on campus. This continues today, whether someone's a capitalist or a socialist. My point of view is people don't know what the hell they're talking about, and they're caught up in somebody else's argument, while neighborhoods across America continue to be impoverished and folks continue to be tied to their day job. I'm here to liberate all the corporate sharecroppers, as some of you may know. So we'll talk about the movie. I went to go see it. If you saw Michael Moore's movie, let me know what you think about it. Going to get a little peek at the power of hip-hop on capital markets. It's something that maybe I'm a pioneer in covering. It's an underreported subject. Someone should write a book on the influence that hip-hop has had on the stock market. It's one of the reasons why I wrote my book, The Entrepreneurial Secret. Oh, hold on. Let me see if I put the camera on me. My book, in case you haven't gotten it, I don't know why. We went from like 700,000 to like 30,000 in 1 week on Amazon.com. And yes, let me tilt my head. Philly, all you Yankees fans, we can start the argument right now. I'm not at all worried about the Dodgers. You all seem to be slightly concerned about the Angels. But how about the Phillies, man? Hillary in Russia. Is that geopolitical enough for you? Hillary in Russia. Anyone been following Russian news? I watch it very closely. And I want to come back to repeat a little bit of our discussion or add on to the talk about the demise of the dollar. A nice little clip, point of view, summary from someone on Bloomberg television that I want to share with you. I think it hits all the right points. Some of you are preying on the downfall of the dollar, but you don't have a really realistic or scientific view of how that will happen. There's a couple things that will have to happen first for the dollar to no longer be the reserve currency. Bloomberg, someone gave a nice report. I think her name is Sarah Eisen. Sarah Eisen of Bloomberg. Okay, send your comments in. By the way, did anyone see the 76ers exhibition game last night? From what I understand, Elton Brand, if you read his lips, I read his lips. Maurice from Philly, Glenn from Philly, any of my Philly viewers or listeners, did Elton Brand of the 76ers call that cat soft? I mean, look, his lips were saying, look like to me, he's like, yo, dude, come on, you're soft. Could Andre Iguodala and Elton Brand actually work out this year, Philadelphia 76ers? Okay, listen. Let me just give full disclosure. I'm going to talk a little bit about a gentleman named Lior Cohen in the music business. Some of you seen him. Some of you never heard him at all. Let me put Lior's image up there. Let me straighten that out. Lior Cohen. Now, full disclosure, I met Lior Cohen in 1990. Oh, no, hold on. I have beef with Lior Cohen. I just remembered beef. Have you all ever had the experience where, you know, you're not prepared to really say anything negative about someone in a certain way, and then you remember you have beef? I have beef with Lior Cohen. Let me say what the beef is, my experience with him, and then we'll talk about the business lesson that he's teaching. I had booked as a promoter, and Lior Cohen himself was a former concert promoter. I had booked the group Onyx. You know, throw your guns in the air. Onyx is from Queens, right? By the way, shout to Jamaica's Queens. I was in Queens last week. I may mention that a little bit. So I had booked Onyx for a show. And like $3,000. And the bunk lot, Lior Cohen, puts them on what's called a promotional tour, because that record was blowing up. And so just for you concert promoters, peace to all the college students listening to my show. By the way, another one of the reasons why we do the hour by hour lineup is because I have college students that need to plan their day out, so they want to know what hour to listen. So if you go to the fan page on Facebook, you'll notice we're actually laying out the hour by hour lineup. But in any event, for you concert promoters out there, many of you in college doing parties, if you book an act, you have to be careful, because on the food chain, you're like third or fourth. A record label can take precedence with a booking agent. Many of you have horror stories. So what Lior Cohen did while he was at Def Jam, Onyx was signed to them. Even though I had a signed contract with the booking agency, Famous Artist Agency, the great Eric Wilson, I think it was through them, I don't think it was Mark Cheatham at ICM, but in any event, it was famous. No, it wasn't Eric Wilson, it was another guy. But in any event, Leo Cohen just took this, the contract I had meant nothing. All you all into property rights and contract certainty, BS. It means nothing to a record label. If they want to sell records, that's what they'll do. They'll take anybody off of a signed show, a paid show. This is why you artists end up broke, because a record label doesn't care about paid shows. They want to put you on the road for free so that you can sell records. So that's what happened to me. So that's my beef. I had beef with Leo Cohen and had forgotten about it. See how tender and forgiving and merciful the heart of the black man is? So after that, I met Leo in 1996 when I was with Wu-Tang. I had taken Method Man over to the Def Jam offices for a meeting with Leo. Leo wanted to talk to Meth about something private, which I'm not going to get into. But at the end of the meeting, Leo and Method Man came out of the office, and I was seated in a position, I guess Leo couldn't see me or he wanted me to hear this. You never know with Leo. But he said, so Meth, please tell Cedric to lay off of a certain person on the Def Jam staff. Leo had been complaining to Meth that I had been too aggressive, too hard on the staff at Def Jam in association with promoting Meth's album and doing some other things. This may have actually been 95. But in any event, so Meth defended me. He said, nah, said he's just doing his job. He's on his grind. So enough of that. We had a couple private meetings with Leo. If you get my book, Volume 2. Volume 2 is the gold sunlight looking cover. Volume 2, I mentioned Leo Cohen and what he wanted Wu-Tang to do. He wanted us to allow Method Man to have his second album come out before the, pardon me, he wanted Method Man's second album to come out before Wu-Tang's second album. And he wanted to convince us that that was in our best interest. To this day, I'm not really sure. I can see a short-term benefit if we had let the second Method Man album come out before the second Wu-Tang album. The jury's still out on that. I think it would have caused problems within the group. So I think the decision was made to err on the side of caution. But this man, Leo Cohen, that you saw last night or heard last night, is not just Russell and Rick Rubin. All that's nice. I don't want to call them Def Jam emeritus or that they're ceremonial in any way. But if you really want to understand the growth of Def Jam, you have Russell's story before you. You don't really know the role that Leo Cohen played and how important he was in interacting with multinational corporations and others on behalf of Def Jam, folks that really didn't respect Russell, people that Russell may not have fully felt comfortable speaking their language. Leo played that role. Very important business principle. I talk about it in Volume 2 of my book, The Entrepreneurial Secret. We talk about negotiating, good cop, bad cop, as well as the importance of subordination. So Leo Cohen subordinated himself to allow Russell to play this public figure and be the front, I won't say front man, but to have the, to be the representative face and image and icon of Def Jam while he did a lot of the management and behind the scenes power broker. I'm not saying Russell was not involved, but anyone who knows that Leor was a silent but key player in all of that. So let me give you some audio. Here's what struck me last night. For those of you in business, you entrepreneurs, whether you are at the job or about to start a business, you have a brand, you have an image, and you have a reputation. Three separate things. A brand is not an image, and an image is not a reputation. Everywhere you go, you are projecting or representing or conveying those three things. Here's Leo Cohen on the Def Jam logo, as he gave it meaning.
God creates us in a way for survival. Like you touch a stove, your hand jumps off. Your bright light hits you, your pupils dilate. But here's an interesting fact. Throw a non-swimmer in the deep end. What do? They flare their arms and kill themselves faster when I was signing one rapper after the next, I was so desperate that I kept flaring my hands and I kept dying faster. I said, how am I going to survive? It was the logo. It was there in front of me all the time. So I brought the whole company together. And I said to them, I want you to think about it like this. We're going to be the AMCO of this. Artists, labels, they come in for transmission job. We're going to get underneath the car. We're going to have our work suit on, drop a transmission, and get them out happy and service them. Now, you think Death Row with their swollen muscles can squeeze underneath that car? Or you think that Bad Boy with their shiny Versace suits are going to risk getting some oil dripped on them? We're going to be the blue-collar hard workers of this thing. From now on, everything you do it for the logo.
Okay, now, he's describing a change, a transition in the period of the growth of Def Jam when they were a little, when they were floundering. Loud Records, we were over at Loud Records, Wu-Tang, Loud RCA, representing more of a grimy sound, a dirty sound, so to speak. As he mentioned, Bad Boy represented that smooth lifestyle, the uptown hustler, glamorous life. And Death Row, you had the gangster, power broker image, I guess. Authoritarian, we run this type of symbolism over there. So you, and we talked about this, it was like three satellites. It was Wu-Tang, it was Death Row, and it was Bad Boy. This is 94, 95, 96. Period. Everybody else was a satellite. Jay-Z was just emerging. Rockefeller was just coming up. Bad Boy was light years ahead of where Rockefeller was at that time. So Lior is talking about how to position Def Jam at that time, because Def Jam barely had relationships with those three major labels. So they had signed Method Man, but Wu-Tang was a Loud Records group. They didn't have any relationship with the Death Row artists. They had affiliated with Warren G, so they were on the periphery of Tupac, Snoop, Dogg Pound, Dr. Dre. And Bad Boy was their own record label, so there was no direct link between Bad Boy and Def Jam, except that Lior, as smart as he was, he would have Puffy do remixes, and he was instrumental in remixing songs related to Wu-Tang. Lior had to actually fight to get us to consider, and I was not there, I was not involved in that particular conversation, but there was a tug of war between letting Puffy remix Wu-Tang related records. It was a move that Lior wanted, that we were resisting it. Good move again, Lior. Let me run Lior one more time back on the logo. Listen up.
God creates us in a way for survival. Like, you touch a stove, your hand jumps off. Your bright light hits you, your pupils dilate. But here's an interesting fact. Throw a non-swimmer in the deep end. What do? They flare their arms and kill themselves faster. When I was signing one rapper after the next, I was so desperate that I kept flaring my hands and I kept dying faster. I said, how am I going to survive? It was the logo. It was there in front of me all the time, so I brought the whole company together. And I said to them, I want you to think about it like this. We're going to be the AMCO of this. Artists, labels, they come in for transmission job. We're going to get underneath the car. We're going to have our work suit on, drop a transmission, and get them out happy and service them. Now, you think Death Row with their swollen muscles can squeeze underneath that car? Or you think that Bad Boy with their shiny Versace suits are going to risk getting some oil dripped on them? We're going to be the blue-collar hard workers of this thing. From now on, everything you do it for the logo.
Now, he was Mr. Inside. Russell was Mr. Outside. I'm just telling you my experience. I don't care what nobody says about that time period. It wasn't my experience. It was their experience. I know who I dealt with. I know who I saw. We did not see Russell and any of the kind of outward figures that were being projected on the magazine. There were certain people at each label, the radio stations, management companies that were making moves, running the show. They were not celebrities. They were not trying to get in front of the camera. They could care less about the camera. This is why I try to put emphasis on leaving what goes on in front of a camera or a microphone. Sometimes diminish the importance of that. I learned very early on. I just did an interview last week talking about this. The power is behind the microphone and behind the camera, as well as in front of it and on it. Two different forms of power. I have a lot of power right now talking in this microphone, but there's certain forms of power I don't have because I'm out front wearing a Phillies cap. Feel me? So let me read. This is from Russell's book, Life and Death, Sex, Drugs, Money, and God. Russell Simmons with Nelson George, talking about Lior. Russell says, crucial to the success of Rush Management, the national tours, and my overall growth as a businessman was the involvement of Lior Cohen, a tall, lanky, intense Israeli. Lior did the detail work on all of my management-related business and would grow to be an indispensable part of all my music-related activities. Now, let me link that up with a quote that I have in my book. I mean, Lior Cohen clearly was Mr. Inside to Russell's outside. Now, in my book, Chapter 10, Volume 2, The Business Principles, I take a quote from Jude Winiski, the political economist. Here's what he says. He says, I became a successful entrepreneur when I was 42 years old, when I started Polyconomics in July of 1978. The first thing I did was ask a successful small businessman for his advice on how I should get started. The best advice he gave was recommending that I immediately hire an assistant to handle all the paperwork required by the different tiers of governments. Someone who could also do all the managerial work that goes into processing the product that I was selling, my economic and political analysis. I sometimes wonder if I could have survived the barriers that clog the entrepreneurial pipeline these days if I had not taken his advice. I'm not into predicting nobody's fate, but it is very hard to imagine Def Jam growing the way it did without Lior Cohen. So Russell wrote this a few years ago. He says, today he is the president of Def Jam Island, the most successful label owned by Seagram, and is still involved in all my ventures from clothing to the internet to television. When I first encountered Lior Cohen in 1983, he was promoting shows at the Hollywood Palladium. He booked Run DMC on a show with the Red Hot Chili Peppers, the Butthole Surfers, and Suicidal Tendencies, so he definitely understood the possibilities of the culture. When he saw Run DMC in LA, he fell in love with them. Not long after that, I gave Lior a small job at Rush Management. He moved to New York, lived in an Ishii hotel, and was Andre Harrell's assistant. So I'm going to stop right there. You got to have this if you're going to grow. I have to have it. You have to have somebody who doesn't care about what goes on in front of the cameras. Someone who's going to do the detail work. Someone who's going to manage things. Someone who's going to be a coordinator. Something that I write about in my book. You have to have a coordinator if you're going to try to grow a business. Someone who's the executor. And this is one of the dilemmas of the creative, charismatic, more artistic person, is that they create, they stimulate activity, they have spontaneous motion, but there's nobody coming behind them or a group of people to give order to what they set in motion. Order is the second law of the universe. Motion is the first. But if you have motion without order, eventually you have chaos. You needed Lior.
God creates us in a way for survival. Like, you touch a stove, your hand jumps off. Your bright light hits you, your pupils dilate. But here's an interesting fact. Though a non-swimmer in the deep end, what do? They flare their arms and kill themselves faster. When I was signing one rapper after the next, I was so desperate that I kept flaring my hands and I kept dying faster. I said, how am I going to survive? It was the logo. It was there in front of me all the time. So I brought the whole company together. And I said to them, I want you to think about it like this. We're going to be the AMCO of this. artists, labels, they come in for transmission job. We're going to get underneath the car. We're going to have our work suit on, drop a transmission, and get them out happy and service them. Now, you think Death Row with their swollen muscles can squeeze underneath that car? Or you think that Bad Boy with their shiny Versace suits are going to risk getting some oil dripped on them? We're going to be the blue-collar hard workers of this thing. From now on, everything you do, you do it for the logo.